Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Bruce Sudano is an American musician and songwriter. His career in music began when he co-founded Alive and Kicking. They released one single, Tighter, Tighter, which peaked at number 7 on the Billboard charts in 1970. Tommy James wrote the tune and co-produced the album. Bruce had written much of the band's repertoire, but it was James' mentorship that helped him to elevate his work. His focus intensified as his songs were picked up and recorded by some of the major artists of the day, including Dolly Parton, Reba McEntire, and Michael Jackson with his brother Jermaine. But his most fruitful association dates from 1977, when Brooklyn Dreams was hired to provide background vocals for Donna Summer on her album I Remember Yesterday. In 1980, the relationship blossoming beyond the studio, Donna and Bruce married. The fusion of their professional and personal lives boosted each other's creativity as they co-wrote her worldwide smash hit Bad Girls, as well as Lucky, On My Honor, Can't Get to Sleep at Night, and Starting Over Again, which Dolly Parton recorded, and lofted to number 1 on the Billboard country music charts. Tragically, Donna passed away in 2012. From 1983 to 2012, Bruce and Donna continued to collaborate, writing music, producing, and releasing successful albums throughout those years. This great loss in his life opened the door that led ultimately to a period of creative growth, releasing 6 albums and numerous singles in the last decade. And now 2024's latest album release, Talking Ugly Truths, Telling Pretty Lies. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Bruce Sudano. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in Milan, Italy, and I'm doing very well. And I've been here for about 4 months now. Yeah. I generally split my time a third here in Milan, a third in Los Angeles, okay. And then a third of the time ends up I'm on the road somewhere.
I know it's an extensive and multi-decade journey in the entertainment industry. So the 3 to 4 minute hybrid version, at what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the entertainment music world, creating, producing, writing. And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. At about 9 years old, I got taken to a rock and roll show. There used to be rock and roll shows at the Brooklyn Paramount and the Brooklyn Fox. And, it would be a lineup of, Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Anthony in the Imperials. It was just a diverse lineup of artists. And as a 9-year-old, I just was brought into this theater and saw all the performers on stage and the lights, and I was totally intrigued. But at that point, I didn't know exactly how I would fit into this world. I really didn't see myself as a pop on the stage kind of entertainer guy. But also around that time, my father had a route where he had jukeboxes. Jukeboxes were,
yeah,
these boxes with all kinds of 45s and records inside them, and you put a quarter in or a dime or a dollar or whatever it is now, I don't know. And so he would every week would come home with boxes of 45s of the singles of the songs that he would be switching in and out of the jukeboxes. And I got intrigued by the names of the titles on these records. Underneath the title, there was a name or two names or three names in parentheses. And I came to understand that these were the songwriters. So this was my draw. I said, oh, the songwriting, this quickly became my passion. My passion was to become a songwriter, I was coming out of the era of just after the era of the Brill Building. And, there were these songwriters, Neil Diamond and Lieber and Stoller and Carole King and Doc Pumas and Morty Schumann. And, this is where I saw myself as my way into the world of music. As a young kid, my Italian grandfather had come back to Italy and come back to Brooklyn with an accordion for me, you know. And so as a young kid, I was sort of obligated to take accordion lessons. And so this was my introduction to actually the music technical side of writing music and understanding chord progressions and melodies and all these things. And at the age of 12, I got hired as an accordion player to be part of a little trio and play in a little, I don't know if it was for a bar mitzvah or a sweet 16 or what it was, but there I was with there was a trumpet and a guy on guitar and me on accordion. So I got paid, you know, 15 or 20 bucks, and I was like, I'm in the music biz, you know. After that, I started putting bands together in my neighborhood and started writing songs for my band. And this was a way for me to grow as a songwriter and actually see how my songs would play out live. And that was kind of how I went until in 1968, I put a band together. It was called Alive and Kicking, and we were the house band at a club in Manhattan called Cheetah. It was on 52nd Street, right off 8th Avenue in Manhattan. At the time, I was in university. I went to St. John's University. I was a theater major. And so I would play till, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd go home, sleep a few hours, and then go to school the next day. One night, a guy named Tommy James from Tommy James and the Shondells
Yes.
came into the club, saw the band. He was at the top of his career right at that particular moment. You know, Hanky Panky, Money Money, I Think We're Alone Now. This was right before Crimson and Clover and Crystal Blue Persuasion and all that, right in that moment. He lived around the corner from the club. I, as a young kid, just kind of glommed on to him. And, you know, he was gracious and kind and generous with his time. And so I would, on breaks, I would run around the corner to his apartment and try to write songs with him. And one of the songs that I got my name put on one of his records there, it was called Ball of Fire. You know, he brought me into the recording studio, saw how records were made, brought me up to Roulette Records. I got a $1,500 advance to sign with BMI. I was like, most money I'd ever seen in my life. And so he kind of took me under his wing, schooled me. I learned so much from him. The following year, he produced my band, Alive and Kicking. We had a top 10 record in America called Tighter Tighter, you know, and I was in.
It's been a fascinating journey of collaborations and inspirations. With multiple decades, what is the thing that keeps you going to create and get up on stage?
You know, it's where I know who I am and where I have my sense of purpose, you know. And in terms of you know, songwriting, and you know, I have a philosophy of keep living, keep writing. You know, as you live and you stay engaged in life, for me personally, you know, meeting people, hearing their stories, you know, I listen well. I've discovered that I'm kind of an assimilator. I assimilate things, and I don't necessarily consciously realize I'm doing this, but you know, emotionally, I take things in, I absorb them, and then when I go to write, you know, I kind of try to write from a stream of consciousness kind of perspective. Go in without any real thought or whatever, and till I find a seed of inspiration that kind of sets me off. And then I'm like, aha, okay, this is what it is. Now, what am I trying to say? You know, and it's at that point I kind of put the craft of songwriting into what I'm doing and try to shape it and make sense of it. And so that's kind of how I work. And, you know, thus far, it's been the thing that drives me. And I continue to, you know, I remain inspired. And as far as playing, you know, playing live, it's basically the most fun I can have, because it's like the songs are already written. All I have to do is get up on stage and tell a story, sing a song. And, you know, I find audiences generally are engaged. You know, they want to be engaged. They want to have a good time. They want to hear the stories. And so it's a really nice exchange. That's it.
Do you still write for yourself and others, or is it just more for yourself?
In the last decade, it has basically been for myself. I write by myself for myself. You know, a long career of being a collaborator and co-writing with many people and all that. But you know, I found myself at a point in my life basically 12 years ago when my wife of 32 years passed away.
Yes.
And, you know, after, you know, decades of, you know, my wife was Donna Summer.
Yes.
You know, after decades of touring with her, writing with her, creating with her, it became a moment where I was like, okay, how do I digest this moment? How do I carry on with my life? What do I do?
Yes.
And it became the moment for me to just be me, say what I want to say in the way that I want to say it without collaborating and compromising. So that's been the way it's been for the last decade, you know, and that's not to say that that can't change. It might change tomorrow, but for now, that's how it's been.
Being a collaborator for a number of years, and then after a period of processing and digesting the loss, and then moving into a space of creating, writing, and producing for yourself, by yourself, did that take a period of time to get used to that adjustment, or did it happen quite quickly, organically, and naturally?
No, it really happened quite quickly, because since over this last decade, I've put out 6 albums. The first one, which is called With Angels on a Carousel, was the record that I wrote while my wife was sick. And after she passed away. So there was so much emotional stuff going on inside me that, you know, the songwriting was really a refuge and a place of where I could express myself. So it kind of, you know, the transition happened really quickly. But it was for a reason of,
yes,
of escape in a way, and it was a way to save myself in that moment, and it kind of just propelled me forward into, you know, it made clear the direction I was to go.
Tell us about the latest project.
Latest project, Talking Ugly Truth, Telling Pretty Lies. It's been so far my most well-received record, which is kind of interesting. It's a record that produced mostly by a guy named Ken Lewis, and a couple tracks by my long-time production partner, Randy Ray Mitchell. Conceptually, songs are Talking Ugly Truth is really it tells the story of a couple of renegades who are living life on the edge and are choosing to do things under the table and around the corner, and they're kind of scheming their way through life. You know, the story in the song is that, you know, ultimately in these kind of situations, you know, you think you're getting away with things, but ultimately shit catches up with you. I also compare it to like a mafioso kind of thing where, you know, the mafioso guys are getting away with shit their whole lives are. And they get to a certain decade of their life, you know, and you know, here they are in the last, you know, they're in their 70s and they get busted for jaywalking, you know, and end up spending the rest of their life in jail, you know. Mm-hmm. So in this particular song, at some point in the song, I do a Bonnie and Clyde reference. But, you know, so there's that, you know, there's probably the next single off the album is going to be a song called Under the Gun, which sort of a commentary on life. It's a commentary on the gun control issue that we have going on here in America.
Oh, yes.
And also on this concept of, you know, people saying, you know, let's go back to the way it was, you know, that's just such a false narrative. It's not about going back and recapturing something that was, you know, the past always gets romanticized. You know, in fact, it's really about now and tomorrow. There's another song on the album that I had a great thrill, because there's a song that I wrote called Two Bleeding Hearts, which I get to do as a duet with Valerie Simpson. And for those who don't know who Valerie
yes.
Simpson is, you know, she's one half of the great duo of Ashford and Simpson.
Yes.
You know, wrote songs like Ain't No Mountain High Enough, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, I'm Every Woman, just to name, you know. The
Solid.
Big,
they did Solid together, yes.
Solid, yeah, you know, and... So, you know, I wrote this song and I'm like, you know, this song should be a duet. You know, it's basically a song about a relationship, you know, and your relationship is fine and everything is going along. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, you have this massive argument, because it's all about these subtle pressures that we're all living life with. You know, you don't really recognize them sometimes, and your relationship is fine. But sometimes there's an explosion, you know, and who's going to be the first one to like break the ice and say, look, let's get this back together again. But anyway, I asked Valerie to do it with me. She said, I love the song, let's do it. So that's on the record, and highlight for me. What else is there? This Make the World Go Away, it's an upbeat song, but it's really like a prayer of like, you know, help me take the weight off my shoulders to navigate the world that we're living in today, you know, and there's How'd You Get Here? You know, I'm a baby boomer, you know, so How'd You Get Here is the baby boomer story. You know, yes. It starts with to the generation of black and white TV, you know, and just realizing that here we are at this point in our lives, you know, and how do you navigate this point in your life and what's going on? And so I kind of relay my personal experience in that, you know, and that dovetails. And there's a spoken word piece on this record called Navigating the Unforeseen. And so How'd You Get Here kind of conceptually dovetails into that concept. And then there's Better Than This, which is a song about, you know, I start off, I'm 17 years old. I'm driving around the neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'm stopping by Nadine's house, you know, seeing if I can get a little late night action, you know, and then second verse, I'm a little bit older, but you know, the point of the song is whatever phase of life you're in, you know, it's a beautiful time if you search out the beauty in it. So that's the record. And the other thing about the album is that for my albums, I typically try to find a visual artist to come up with the concept for the covers.
Yes.
So last year I exec produced a documentary about Donna Summer. It's called Love to Love You, Donna Summer.
Yes.
And in one segment of the documentary, we highlight Donna's artwork. She was a painter, which a lot of people never realized. So what I did was I took an iPhone photo of one element of one of her paintings and used it as the cover.
Wow.
So that's there's great. That. So, you know, that's the new record, more or less. Rock and roll.
You're showing me the vinyl, and I'd love to hear your perception of this discussion. I have it with all the artists I interview for the podcast. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990. And cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
I think that people are adjusting to the situation. And I think choice is good. You know, we've all come up in different decades, and the music business has continued to evolve. And, I've seen it happen over decades. It's the end. There's this way of doing it now. And so I think it's a moment of where, you know, there are people when it comes to vinyl, you know, they have very great memories and experiences of vinyl, getting that record and putting it on and, you know, listening to the, you know, and then there's the concept of, oh, it sounds warmer and it's not, it's, you know, the CDs are colder and all of these things.
Yeah.
So I think that, all, you know, then there's young people who are experiencing vinyl for the first time. And so there's all that nostalgia involved in it and discovery. And the same with CDs. There are those people that came up in the CD time and, you know, they have their connection to it. And then there's all this generation that's coming up in the streaming world. So I think there's room for everything. It's funny because, you know, obviously I did vinyl, I did CD. I just recently became aware that vinyl is really bad for the environment.
Yeah.
And so I was like, so this is another thing that I have to incorporate into my analysis of vinyl. You know, and in terms of the sales and all that, I mean, a big part of the sales of vinyl and CD are live shows. You know, people like to have a takeaway, you know, I mean, I do sign vinyl, I do sign CDs, and people like to have a memento. I don't know, even know how much they're even listening to it, but I don't know. That's my speech on it.
What's coming up next? What's happening for the rest of the year?
Rest of the year is I am going to be doing a video for the next single, which is Under the Gun. At the same time, I will be visiting with my daughters and grandchildren. We have a little every year. I rent a house somewhere, and there's 18 of us,
Oh, wow.
my daughters and grandchildren and husbands, and we go to somewhere and we spend 10 days in a house together. So there'll be that. And then it's October 1st, and I come back to Milan. And then I've put an Italian band together here in Milan, which consists of percussion, cello, bass, and me on guitar. And I'm going to start in the fall doing some shows here in Europe and also recording with the Italian band. I've done one recording with the Italian band. I co-wrote a song called Bad Girls, which was a big hit for Donna many years ago.
Yes.
And for a long time, I've done it in my show. And how I present it in my show is I presented it as the way the song was originally written, which was on an acoustic guitar, and I perform the song that way. But I've never recorded the song, so I recently recorded, and separate from the new album, I put it up on CD. It's called Bad Girls Acoustic, Bruce Sedano, and I've done it with the Italian band. So I'm going to continue this process in the fall of recording songs with the Italian band. I will revisit some older songs and then also record some new songs with them for the next project.
Ah, lovely.
So.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
What's going on, Marvin Gaye?
Yep.
I Never Loved a Man by Aretha Franklin. I would say Blown in the Wind by Bob Dylan. I think it's one of the greatest songs of all time. I would say something by Bruce Springsteen off of The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. I'm not exactly sure what song I would pick. I don't know, something off that album. And maybe Old 55 by Tom Waits.
Great selection. Most of them are on my list. I just need to add a couple, so thank you for that. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Everybody be kind, be generous, and try to bring a light wherever you go. Be a light.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.